theory by treating the most important part of normalization, which is the normalization of the coupling constant. And from that, I will show you the structure which is behind our normalization, at least the order of the calculation that we are doing, which is a structure of renormalization group. You have transformation. You can make transformation into the observable of your quantities, which maps into transformation on the coupling constant. So, remember, we treated renormalization of the scalar 5-4 fluid. And we have seen that if we are interested in the irreducible function, the two-point irreducible function depends on just one momenta, which is a two-point irreducible function. And it's, so in fact, it depends on two momenta, if you want. It's an irreducible part of this diagram. One momenta here, one momenta minus p. And gamma of p is up to a factor of the delta function of conservation of the momenta. It's p squared plus m squared plus g over 2 t of m, where t of m is just the amplitude associated to the statpole diagram, where the propagator is just the propagator is just 1 over p squared plus m squared in momentum space. Okay? And we have seen that this quantity is ultraviolet divergent. And if you assume that there is a cut, if you enforce that there is a sharp momentum cutoff, namely the momenta in all the intermediate process of the theory cannot be larger than lambda, both the energy and the momenta, but the vector, then we have seen that this is divergent like lambda squared, which means that mass is renormalized. And but we have seen that in fact m is not the physical mass, which is the mass you observe in some physical process, which is related to the, in fact, the physical mass is related to zero of gamma of p. The point where gamma, the point in p where gamma of p vanishes, where p squared equals minus physical square, then gamma of p. And therefore, we have seen that the physical mass, in fact, is given by this. This is the physical mass squared. And therefore, if one is interested in just having constructing a quantum field theory, a consistent quantum field theory, which has a physical mass, for instance, equal to zero, so if we consider the massless I4 theory, massless means that, in fact, the physical mass has to be equal to zero. And this implies that, in fact, the mass here, we started from, has to be equal to minus g. And then you have a factor of 1/2. And if you make the calculation carefully, you find this factor, which comes out from the integral of this integral, because t of m is given by the momentum integral. T of m, here will be, this comes just for the integral of d dk, d4k, over 2 pi to the 4 of 1 over k squared. Remember, this is a perturbative correction proportional to the coupling constant. This is a g, this is not a 9. This is a coupling constant. And therefore, classically, you know, at 3 levels, the mass is zero. But the mass gets a correction at one loop, which is proportional to lambda squared. So this is one loop. Additive correction. Okay. So now we are going to consider to look at what's the value of the four-point function. So this is the two-point function. So now we shall consider the four-point function because we have seen that the four-point function has also an ultraviolet divergence. But before that, let me just say a few words about classical massless I-4 theory, because it has some interesting and, in fact, quite a deep property. So if you consider the classical massless field theory, it's just given by the action S of I equal G4x 1 half d mu phi squared plus G over 4 phi 4. Okay, I am working with the Euclidean action, as usual, because the calculations are simpler, but what I'm going to say is valid also in the Minkowski space time. Okay? So this action, of course, has a property that is, it is invariant under Euclidean Poincaré transformation. It's invariant. Source transformation as if this would be the same as the theory is massive, of course. But in the massless case, you have no phi 4 term here. There is an additional invariance, which is scale invariance. Scale invariance, which is only true if the mass is equal to zero. And what is scale invariance? It means that if you make a transformation when you change the space into lambda times x, where lambda, small lambda, is different from this one, it's just a scale factor. You multiply by some number the vectors in space, and at the same time, you change the field phi into lambda times phi. Okay? Then, in other words, in fact, this is equivalent to say that you make a transformation into the field phi, into a field phi indexed by lambda, which is defined by phi lambda of x is lambda times phi of lambda x. See? So if I have a field configuration phi, I mapped it into another field configuration phi of lambda, which is defined in that way. And if you want to think a little bit about it, if this is x space and if this is phi space, if I take field configuration like that, this is phi. Phi lambda, if lambda is positive, means that I am multiplying the value of the field, but in the same time, I am contracting space. This is phi, and this is phi of lambda for lambda larger than.
Question.
Make a scale transformation, both on space, so you contract space and you expand the value of the field. Yes?
I'm confused about the argument when you say phi lambda of x is equal to lambda phi of lambda x.
Yes.
But like to me, it looks like you should have x over lambda in the argument to get back.
Well, that's it's just a way to say that you change. Whenever you have an x, you change it in lambda x, for instance, here. I start from phi of x, and I change it. So I start from phi of x, if you want. And if I have x here, I change it in lambda x. And if I have a phi, I have changed it in lambda phi. So in fact, this is an equivalent way to state. The rigorous definition, if you prefer, is this. You're right. Sometimes one gets confused and one makes one of the transformation is the opposite way. So take this as a rigorous definition of making a scale transformation over the field.
Okay.
And then, so in fact, you are contracting space here, but you are changing x into lambda x. So then it's easy to see that the action of the speed phi of lambda is equal to the action s of phi. For this term, it's easy because you change x into lambda x, and you have a lambda here, you have a lambda to the power 4, which can be absorbed into a redefinition of the field. And here, the same works because you have a derivative with respect to mu, and you, when you make a derivative with respect to mu, you get a 1 over lambda factor, which cancel out factor. So in fact, simply you have to make a scale transformation, but assuming that we write in x prime equal lambda x, the change of variables is in the proportion. Okay? So you see that whenever for any field configuration, the action of the rescaled field configuration is equal to the action of the field phi. And that's true for any
Let me show you what it means.
I consider the action S of phi lambda. This is V4x, 1/2 d over dx of lambda phi of lambda x squared plus g over 44 lambda 4 phi of lambda x to the power 4. Okay? This is integral d4x, 1/2. I have a lambda squared here, and then I have d over dx of phi of lambda x. So, but remember, this is the derivative with respect to x of phi of lambda x. So this is, if you want, the derivative of phi of lambda x, but of course you get a factor lambda squared in addition. Because you are making a derivative with respect to x and not with respect to lambda x. You see? And then you get here, of course, the same things, g over 24, lambda 4, phi 4, of lambda x. So now I make a change of variables I call lambda x equal x prime. Here I have a lambda 4. Here I have lambda 4, so this is equal to d4x prime. And then I have 1/2 of d of phi of x prime squared plus g over 4.
But shouldn't the d change now?
To the power 4, yes.
But the partial derivative changes now, right?
The
derivative changes as well, right?
No. I'm just writing the fact that the partial derivative with respect to x of a function of lambda x can be written as lambda times the partial derivative with respect to lambda x of phi of lambda x. So okay. If I rewrite lambda x for x prime, this is lambda d over d x prime of phi of x prime, which is the only thing I need. Okay? So you see, it's true for any field, not necessarily for a field which obeys the equation of motion. So this is an additional symmetry. And which is called scale invariance. And you see that this means that if when you perform a scale transformation, if you rescale x by this value, lambda x, you have to change phi by lambda phi. So this means, in fact, that you say that the scaling dimension of the field phi is 1, because when I make such a scale transformation, I have to rescale phi by the factor lambda, while I don't have to rescale the dimension of the coupling constant.
There are some COEs, in fact, for some other COEs, or if we were not in dipole 4, this is valid only in dipole 4. If we weren't doing that in dipole 4, well, 6 wouldn't have worked, but the dimension of the coupling constant would be non-zero. Okay, so keep in mind those dimensions. Okay. So you see that the massless 5-4 series in dipole 4 has something very special, which is valid only in four dimensions. Okay? And let us go back to the four-point function. Consider the four-point. Irreducible function that we treated last time. So remember, the four-point irreducible function is given, so it was defined as, so it's something which is given by the sum of the irreducible diagram with four momenta column 1, T1, 2, 3, T4, and up to a delta function of conservation of momenta which infers that P1 plus P2 plus P3 plus P4 is equal to 0. It is given by the sum of this diagram with the factor G minus the one bubble diagram with factor G over 2, which are given by this diagram with 1, 2, 3, 4, plus two other diagrams which are equivalent by making permutation of the momenta coming in the different incoming legs of the diagram. And in fact, this corresponds in terms of, those are the diagrams and what are the amplitudes, the number, the function of the momenta associated to that. This is G. So this is just a contribution of by a factor 1. And then I get a minus G squared over 2. It's one loop diagram, so there is a G squared. And I have this function, B, which is I call B, associated to these bubble diagrams. And here I have a function B, which depends on the incoming momenta here. So this is P1 plus P2, plus P of P1 plus P3, plus B of P1 plus P4. Okay. And we have seen that this function B of, let us call it P, the incoming momentum, is just given by the amplitude associated to this bubble diagram where you have an incoming momentum P coming here and an outcoming momentum minus P coming here. It is given by the integral B for K over 2 pi of 4. If K is the momenta flowing in this direction, the momenta flowing in this direction is P minus K, because you have conservation of the momenta, and therefore you have a 1 over K squared times 1 over K minus P squared. And remember here that I'm considering the massless theory, so I don't need to take into account the mass. There's no mass at that order in perturbation theory. And we have seen that this diagram is ultraviolet divergent too, because for large momenta, you can neglect the influence of the momentum P, and you get a d4k over k squared, which is logarithmically divergent. So there is a log divergent, which is a log of number. Okay. So now, what is the exact value of this log of lambda? I just gave you the results. I showed you how to show it. But there is a 4 pi squared, which 1 over 4 pi squared from this factor and the angular degrees of freedom on the three-dimensional sphere. And then you have a log of lambda squared plus
subdominant pair which are finite when the regulator, the cutoff lambda, goes to infinity. Okay? But as someone yesterday mentioned, the logarithm of a mass squared doesn't exist because we know only what are the logarithms of numbers. So this logarithm has to be divided by something which has the dimension of a mass or of an energy here. But in the starting function, we have only two momentum scales. Momentum scales. We have P and the momentum of P and lambda. So we can make only one ratio out of those two momentum scales, which is lambda squared over the square of the momentum P squared, the incoming momentum. So you see. So in fact, we know the dependence of this function as a function of P because it has a divergence in lambda. So for free, knowing the divergence of this simple integral, we know how the integrals when the momentum is different from zero behaves. It's simply a log of lambda squared over p, and then you have terms of order one. So we have basically one constant and then subdominant terms. And I don't need really to know the constant. I would have a constant, but this constant can be set to zero with your calculation that I'm doing. This constant, in fact, depends exactly on the detail of the regularization scheme. Remember, we use the regularization scheme, which was depends on the details. So this log lambda doesn't depend on the regularization scheme, but if you had taken, you know, instead, for instance, of in momentum space, instead of taking a sharp momentum like that, saying that the propagator is basically 1 over p squared, which is multiplied by 1 here and 0 here, if you take a smooth momentum cutoff like that, it will change a little bit the value of this function, so it will change the constant here, but it will not change the leading coefficient, which is the coefficient of the log. So the coefficient of the log here is universal in the sense that it doesn't depend on the details for the regularization scheme. Okay? And, okay, so for free, we know the value of this function as a function of p. And it's very simple. Okay, so now it has an ultraviolet divergence log lambda. You see? So in this, here there is a factor g, here there is a factor g squared, and here there is a sum of three terms which have the same log of lambda contributions. This is the universal ultraviolet divergence. And so, we may ask now, from this calculation, what is the physical coupling constant of the theory? The same way that we asked yesterday the question, what is the physical mass of the theory? And what is the physical constant of the theory? The physical constant of the theory will be determined, so for instance, through some scattering process. So you send particles with some energy E. You come out the particle with the same energy E, because it's an elastic scattering process, and you get some scattering amplitudes, some
numbers. So you get some numbers which are related to the modulus square of some S matrix element. And those S matrix elements, in fact, are obtained theoretically from the value of the irreducible 4-point function when you have incoming and outgoing momenta p such that p squared equal minus the energy squared of your process. Such that the momenta here are something like E and some momentum P. This is the quadri momentum and energy and
first one?
Yes.
Do all the particles have the same momentum?
You can choose. They will have a momenta A here, which is different from the particles. You have particles A equal 1 and 4. Okay? But you can take them to have the same energy because you can make your collision process in the rest of mass frame where all the particles have the same energy. It's an elastic process, so simply you have, of course, that the sum of those momenta is equal to 0. In addition to the sum of, for instance, you may have the sum of the incoming momenta P1, the space momenta P1 and P2 are 0, and then it goes in the other direction, P3, P4. You see? So it's an elastic process, elastic collision in the rest frame. So in such a process depends on two things, the energy of the particles, which is the same for all the particles, and the angle of diffusion, theta. Yeah. It depends only on those two quantities. Okay. But remember, we are here considering the massless theory. So of course, P squared equal P squared. You have no mass frame. So, and you will see immediately that when computing the corresponding irreducible amplitudes at one loop, you run into problem if P equals 0, namely the energy of the particle equals 0, because then you have a log of lambda squared over P squared. So in addition to having a big ultraviolet problem, you have a log of 0 here. You see, the particles are on the, this P is P1 plus P2, but if all the PA are equal to 0, P1 plus P2 is also equal to 0, and we run into what is called infrared problem. But I won't discuss that here. But it's not a problem because usually when you are doing a collision experiment, you are not doing it at zero energy. You are not just putting two particles there and you wait an infinite time so that by some kind of quantum fluctuation, they hit each other and they send very heavy protons and antiprotons, LHC for instance, and send them and back and see. So in fact, a collision process is defined by some energy E. And what you are measuring, when you are measuring the strength of the interaction, is specified by the energy at which you are doing the experiments. Okay. So, in fact, coupling constant, the moral is that coupling constant is measured always at some reference energy or momentum scale. And this will have very important consequences because now I will define a renormalized coupling constant that I call G renormalized as, by definition, I define a renormalized coupling constant as the value of the irreducible 4-point function, which is a function of the momenta PA at some fixed value of the momenta such that typically all the momenta PA are of order mu, some energy or momentum scale. Okay? So I take all the elements of the momenta are at some energy momentum scale that I call mu. Mu is equivalent to this mu is equivalent to the energy, so it's a momentum scale at which I define the coupling constant. Define mean measure. I relate what I'm computing to the measurement in some experiments which is performed at a scale energy, at an energy E, therefore at a momentum scale mu. You see? And you have an infinity in number of ways of doing that, so I will choose as reference momenta, which is called the renormalization point, renormalization description. Since we have seen that at one order, the amplitudes depend only on the sum of the momenta in all the channel, I will choose a reference momenta, the momenta such that P1 plus P2, the modulus of this, is equal to P1 plus P3 squared, equal P1 plus P4 squared, equal mu squared. Okay, that's a choice. We can have taken a more complicated one, you see? So basically it corresponds, in fact, it's something which is symmetric, it corresponds, if you can view it in three-dimensional space, to take P1, P2, P3, and P4, P1, P2, P3, and P4, to have some kind of symmetric configuration, so they are doing like a tetrahedra. You choose the momenta to be such that the square of any sum of the tetrahedra has the same absolute value. You see? Okay. So that's a choice which is convenient.
So these are four momenta squares.
These are always the four momenta. Those are the four momenta. Because this expression here, this log of lambda squared or p squared involves the four momenta. So p squared or momenta is just in my notation, in the Euclidean case, this is p0 squared plus p squared in Euclidean space. And this is my minus e squared plus e squared. Minsk of G space. Yes?
Is this choice possible physically?
Is this choice possible for the?
So if I do an experiment, and
yes.
Is it possible to make a
I don't think it's possible because this is possible if the PIs here, the P1, P2, P3, lies in the Euclidean domain.
Oh, I see.
So they are not on mass shell. So one little problem, if you want, is that with this choice, the P1 up to the P4, the four momentum, are not on the mass shell. So you cannot have this being positive and at the same time having P1 squared equals 0, for instance. But since I'm defining, it's a way to mathematically define what is a renormalized coupling constant. And once I have done that, I can relate this renormalized coupling constant defined for Euclidean momenta to the S value of the S matrix element I am measuring in a physical experiment. So there is just a mathematical dictionary. The strength of the interaction measured in the scattering process will be some function of this renormalized coupling constant. So this renormalized coupling constant is not the physical coupling constant you are measuring, which will depend on E and on theta, but if you are good enough at theory, you can compute the function, how those amplitudes here depends on this renormalized coupling constant. So once you know the renormalized coupling constant, you can derive all the scattering amplitudes and the diffusion coefficients in your experiment. So that's enough. And I take this because it's simpler to compute. Okay. So once I'm doing that, well, it's easy because we know now that what is this renormalized coupling constant, GR, it is the value of the four-point function for the momenta which satisfies this condition. And the four-point function has been obtained in the previous blackboard. So this is the coupling constant we started from, minus G over 2 times three times, because then with this, since this choice of reference momenta is symmetric, the function B of P1 plus P2, B of P1 plus P3, and B of P1 plus P4 give exactly the same number, same results. That's one of the reasons why I choose the symmetric renormalization prescription. And so I get a factor of 3, and then I get a factor 1 over 4 pi squared times logarithm of lambda squared divided by the square of p1 plus p2, so which is mu squared. Okay? So this is the relation between the renormalization, the renormalized coupling constant, and the what is called the bare coupling constant, which is the coupling constant we started from in the bare coupling constant we use in the functional integral.
Should it be G squared?
Pardon?
Should it be G squared?
Yes. Very sorry, you're right. It's of course G squared. Okay? So you see that exactly like in the case of the mass, there is a radiative correction coming from the quantum effects to the classical or bare coupling constant and the renormalized coupling constant, and hence the physical amplitudes which give you the strength of the interaction in the interacting theory is different from the classical coupling constant you started from in the functional integral. And moreover, this renormalized coupling constant contains a log of lambda. So the ultraviolet
singularity is contained in the relation between the renormalized coupling constant and the bare coupling constant we started from, exactly like what was happening for the mass. And so, to define the renormalized finite phi 4 quantum V theory, at least at one loop, of course, because I'm working at one loop, the recipe is simple. You are simply to keep GR fixed and let lambda goes to infinity. And in order to do that, the bare coupling constant goes also to infinity. Because in order for this to be finite, since there is a log lambda squared which goes to infinity, it means that G has also to become singular in some way. Because I can invert this formula and write that G, the bare coupling constant, is GR plus GR squared over 2 times 1 over 4 pi squared log lambda squared over 2 squared plus term higher order terms in GR squared. Well, this is not just the inverse of this formula, but here you have higher order terms, which are terms for the G q, which comes from two loop diagrams. And here, similarly, you have terms of order GR squared in cube. And in order to compute them, you need to go to consider what is the effect of the two loop diagrams, which I'm not considering here. Okay. So once I've defined a theory where GR is fixed, it is easy to see that at that order, at one loop order, the four-point function is, in that case, what is the four-point function? Renormalized theory that we call gamma renormalized, which is a function of four. It's simply I take the expression for the irreducible four-point function and I replace G by the renormalized coupling and I keep only the term of order G and G squared. And of course, you get GR. And then you have this term of plus log of lambda squared over mu squared, which cancels the term of order minus log of lambda squared over p squared, which is present in the original b. So I get minus gr squared over 2 times 1 over 4 pi squared, and I get simply logarithm of, so instead of having a logarithm of lambda squared over p squared, which would have been a logarithm of lambda squared over p1 plus p2 squared, so the square of the four momentum p1 plus p2, the lambda squared by this renormalization is just replaced by a mu squared, because the lambda squared here cancels the lambda squared was here, in this expression, which is here. And then,
sir,
yes?
Just to be sure, there's a plus gr squared here, and there's a minus there.
Yes, there is a plus, because if I invert this, you know, I have gr, I define gr as being g minus g squared over 2
yeah.
times the value of the amplitude of this bubble integral for p squared equal mu squared.
Yeah.
So now I invert this expression, I get g equal gr plus g squared over 2 times the log, but g at leading order in GR is given by GR, so I can replace G here by GR plus term of order GR squared.
Yeah, and on the other side of the...
And the other side, then I have G minus G squared. So the term of G squared times the logarithm of lambda squared plus P squared has a minus sign. But the lambda squared is replaced by the mu squared because of this term. Yes?
But when we invert the expression, do we also need a vector of 3 there?
We need what?
Factor of
3.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. There is a 3 here, so there is a 3 here. Yes.
So after the
yes. And yeah, but wait. I have not finished to write this. This plus the same thing here for. Well, let us write it carefully so that you understand very well that one. You have P1 plus P2 squared plus logarithm of P squared over P1 plus P4 squared. Well, these are, as always, four momenta. Four momenta. And then you have terms of order GR cube that comes from the two diagrams and which will still contains ultraviolet divergence that renormalized only the divergence coming from the one loop diagram. Okay? So the four-point function of the renormalized theory is finite for any p, any external momenta, except when the momenta are equal to zero because of the infrared problem I alluded before, which are special to the fact that we have five forces. So you see, now, if we have performed a renormalization of the coupling constant, the renormalized four-point function is finite. The renormalized two-point function, which is the function of P1 and P2, so this is the renormalized four-point function. Let me call right now renormalized. The renormalized two-point function has been computed when we have computed the path. But you see, the renormalized two-point function is just p squared plus m squared plus g over 2 times t of n. So it was p squared plus term of order gr squared. So it's still p squared plus term of order gr squared, which comes also from two diagrams. So it is also ultraviolet finite. You see, the renormalization of the coupling constant had no influence on the renormalization of the mass, which is fine. And you can check that all the endpoint functions are still ultraviolet finite. For instance, if you are interested in computing what is the irreducible six-point function, we have seen that it is given, I'm considering the irreducible six-point function, so it's very simple. We have seen that it is a term of order g cube with a triangle diagram, with a diagram which is just an internal loop. Okay? And we have seen that this diagram is ultraviolet finite because it's an integral of the form integral e4k over k to the 6. So you have no problem at infinity. So it's ultraviolet finite. And since the first term is of order g squared, when you replace g by the renormalized coupling constant, you just change. So this gives you can just change g by gr cube times the same amplitudes as this triangle diagram plus term of order gr to the power 4, which comes from the two loop diagrams. So you see that the renormalization of the mass of the coupling constant
do exactly what we expected it to do. It removes the ultraviolet divergence of the one loop diagram in the four-point function, but doesn't change anything in the higher order, in the irreducible function with more than four fields. See, so the six-point function, the eight-point function, etc., are still ultraviolet finite. So, conclusion.
Could you explain why our two-point function is of that form? I didn't catch that.
Oh, because I computed it yesterday. Two-point function is just here, p squared plus m squared, which is zero in our case at a leading order, plus g over two, like type t of m. Okay, we have seen that if I set m to zero here, t of m is given by lambda squared with a factor 1 over 4 pi squared. So it's in fact lambda squared over 4 pi squared with a factor g over r. Okay? And therefore, if I choose now that the mass squared is 0 at leading order minus g over 2 times this factor of lambda squared, the two-point function is p squared plus these terms, which is fine-tuned to be 0, plus the gamma of p, that order, is exactly p squared plus, if you prefer, g times 0, plus term of order g squared, which comes from the two-loop diagrams. See? And now, if I replace g by the renormalized coupling constant, but even if this was non-zero, but especially since it is equal to 0, the divergence are pushed forward to higher order. In fact, the divergence even come at 3 loop. The renormalization of the coupling constant will start to be filled only at higher order. So the renormalized coupling constant, gamma renormalized, two-point renormalized coupling constant is equal to the coupling the two-point function we computed before, and it's just p squared. But at that order, there is no difference between the free field theory and the interacting theory. But it's just at the one loop that you have this numerical distribution. Then you have higher order terms. So, the conclusion is very simple. And let me summarize. It means that in order to have a theory where you have vacuum expectation value of the field, phi of z1, phi of zn, okay, in a theory, which are ultraviolet finite, what do you have to do? You don't have to take You have to compute them by, for instance, a functional integral of the form of integrate of phi, and you have to get an exponential minus some action s of phi times phi of z1 times phi of zn. So I want to compute a quantum theory with starting from some action, some functional integral, where I want to have ultraviolet finite correlation functions. Correlation function means vacuum expectation value of products of operators. Okay? And the point is that in order to do that, you shouldn't use the naive action of the theory. What you should use is, you must use, when doing that, a renormalized action. When the renormalized action is the action you started from, but where you replace the mass, the bare mass
and the bare coupling constant, you replace the, yes, you have to put them, the bare coupling constant G and the renormalized coupling constant here. So in fact, you have to replace it by your renormalization, which in that case is a following form. You have indeed a d mu phi squared term. You have a phi squared term, which is a mass term. You have a phi 4 term, which is the interaction terms. But what you have to put here is a factor, let us call A over 2, a factor B over 2, and a factor C over factorial 4, where B here will be just the bare mass squared, which, as we have seen, is just minus gr times 1 over half times 1 over 4 pi squared lambda squared. Okay. The factor C here is the bare mass we have in the theory. So it has to be gr minus or plus, plus gr squared over 2 times 3 over 4 pi squared times logarithm of lambda squared over mu squared. And in fact, you could have, you could need a factor A, but this factor A is 1. So this is a term which corresponds to a mass renormalization. This corresponds to a coupling constant renormalization. And if these terms would have been different from zero, it would have correspond to what is called the field renormalization. But for the quantum field, for the 5-4 theory, at one loop, this renormalization factor, there is no renormalization needed for the kinetic term d phi squared. But it's a property just of the 5-4 theory. See? So the meaning of renormalization is the following. In order to get to construct a theory, a quantum theory which is consistent with no ultraviolet divergence, you have to use a renormalized action where the parameter in the action, the bare action, are not the physical parameter, but they depend on the renormalized parameter and on the ultraviolet cutoff, you see? And you have to fine-tune the A, B, and C when lambda, the ultraviolet cutoff, goes to infinity, so that Gr, the renormalized mass, which here is zero, etc., are finite. And if you do that, if you take the limit lambda goes to infinity, so the limit where the ultraviolet cutoff goes to infinity, and adjust those coefficients A, B, and C according to those formulas so that Gr stays finite, then you get a theory whose all correlation functions, so all matrix elements of operators, are finite. See? So this is the meaning of renormalization, at least at one loop, where I've done, been doing the calculation explicitly. And in fact, it was the idea of renormalization was done in the 50s. For quantum electrodynamics, mid 40s and the 50s of last century. And it took about 10 or 15 years for people to understand really what was going on and whether you can continue this procedure to two loops, three loops, and all orders in perturbation theory. So I won't discuss that more later, but Here I've been doing a calculation only for the massless phi-4 theory at one loop, but it works at all orders in perturbation theory. Also for the massive theory that I won't discuss here. For phi-4, when the dimension of the space is 4. Okay, so now we have found a way to construct a quantum field theory which is consistent at high energy with no ultraviolet divergence, and it's the matrix element of the field operators, which you can construct out of the correlation functions, are finite. So it seems that we understand everything. We don't really understand everything, but there is one subtle point which remains to be discussed, which is something which sounds a bit strange at the beginning, but which is very, very, in fact, important that you have to understand, is that... it's because this is called this. In the renormalized theory, it seems that we have now two parameters. It seems that we have two parameters, GR and mu, as parameter. Because remember, in this expression, for the renormalized four-point function, the renormalized four-point function depends both on GR and mu. So it seems that renormalization has given us a theory which depends on two parameters, a coupling constant and the renormalization scale, instead of a one parameter theory. The classical massless phi-4 theory depends only on the coupling constant. Okay? So, is it true that we have really two parameters in the theory? It's not really true, because in fact, no. Mu is just the reference energy or momentum scale at which the coupling constant was theory, so at which the coupling constant was defined, or if you want, measured. Okay. And imagine that you have a theory and you want to measure the coupling constant of the theory by making a scattering experiment at some energy mu. You make a theory when you want an energy E1, which defines momentum scale mu1, and from that you get a coupling constant G1 renormalized. Now imagine that you make on the same theory a measurement at a different energy scale. So these are energies where the couplings are measured. You get the result G2 for the renormalized coupling constant. Okay? And that's what the calculation predicts. But it doesn't mean that it is a different theory. It's still the same theory. Simply, it means that if you make the same experiments
at different energies, you get different results. Okay. So it means that the property of the theory depends on the energy scale. So that's a property of the theory. But it doesn't mean that the theory depends on the energy. You know, if you are considering the law of gravitation in classical physics, the physics by sentence, you measure the gravitation between an apple, and the ground, or between the moon and the earth, you get the same, you have the same theory. And this was one of the great discoveries and idea of Isaac Newton, that it's the same theory which describes both processes. So it's exactly the same, except that it's a quantum theory. Yes?
I don't see why mu is related to the energy scale at which we perform experiments.
Pardon?
Why is mu related to the energy scale at which we experiment?
In some sense, here I define mu just as the energy scale where I define the value of the coupling constant. You see? And it can be related to this chain of arguments that I've not discussed, that from the value of the irreducible two-point function, you can compute S-matrix element. And from S-matrix element, we can compute diffusion, scattering probabilities in a collision process. And let me look at this formula. You know, the formula for the irreducible four-point function, if you assume that P1 plus P2, I wrote that already. I have defined the renormalized coupling constant as the value of the four-point function at the energy scale is given by that. Because if you take this formula, you find that GR, in fact, is equal by definition to the value of the irreducible four-point function when P1 plus P2 equals squared equal mu squared, etc. Okay? So it's just in the Euclidean regime, so it doesn't correspond to something you are doing. But the renormalized coupling is just defined by the value of the irreducible four-point function for some choice of the momenta, where the momenta are of order mu. You see? And so this means that, in fact, the same theory, if you measure the same irreducible four-point function at different energy scales, you get a different result for the renormalized coupling constant. But this is not a problem for the theory, because, for instance, you can check very easily that if you take a theory where at an energy scale mu1, you have a renormalized quantity gr of mu1. You have a theory, and at energy scales mu1, you measure the value of the, you compute the irreducible four-point function, you find a number, you call it gr of mu1. You see? Now, if at energy scale mu2, you compute the same irreducible four-point function, you get a result gr mu2. What is the connection between those two? The connection between those two is simply that gr of mu2, if you want, is equal minus gr squared of mu2 times 3/2 of 1 over 4 pi squared logarithm of mu squared over mu1 squared. Mu2 over mu1 squared, let us write it like that, equal gr of mu1. If you have this condition up to higher order loop terms, so if you have this relation between gr of mu2 and gr of mu1, then the irreducible function computed as a function of gr of mu2 and taking mu to be equal to mu2 in this formula is equal to the irreducible function computed with the renormalized coupling constant gr mu1 and an energy scale renormalization scale mu1 at at any, for any momenta PA. So it's in fact the same theory because it has exactly all the same correlation functions. And therefore, you have the following picture, which means that let me draw now the mu plane, or if you prefer, the log of mu plane line, and a line which measures the renormalized Cooper constant. You see? If at a scale mu 1, I measure the theory, I find a renormalized coupling constant G1. Now I am making a calculation or an experiment using a renormalized scale mu 2 on the same theory, and I found a renormalized coupling constant G2. Okay? If G1 and G2 satisfy this relation, in fact, they are describing the same theory. Okay? But if G1 measure at scales, imagine that now that I measure at scale mu1 a different G1, then it corresponds to a different theory. Okay. In fact, you indeed have two parameters, mu and gr, but the physical theory is described by, in fact, corresponds to a line in this kind of foliation, in this space of two parameters, and the physical theory depends only on one parameter. You see? Which is, you can view, so the physical theory depends only the physical theory depends only on one parameter. Okay? So, and this parameter is either the value of the renormalized coupling constant u at fixed mu, you see, these are different way to parameterize different quantity, but you can also think it in another way. You can think it as, you assume, for instance, at O, at which scale U, do I measure a given value of the renormalized coupling constant? You see? Well, it's different. You can parameterize. Usually, one does an experiment at a fixed energy scale and one measures the coupling constant and one says, OK, here is the renormalized coupling constant. But you may also ask, at which energy scale do the coupling constant has a fixed value? You see? And this has a very important consequence that I will end up here, which is that, in fact, in general, in a quantum physics theory, at least if is renormalizable, in fact, a consequence of renormalization. Coupling constant, the coupling constant, and the theory has different coupling constant, different coupling constant, depends on the energy scale. And that's a very, very important difference with classical theory or non-relativistic quantum field theory. The coupling constant corresponds to quantity you measure in experiment or that you compute at some
chosen energy scale, and the value of the Koplik constant obtained in that way, either by your calculation or by the experiments, depends on the energy scales that you have either chosen in your calculation or that you have tuned, or which is given by your experiment. Okay? And so this is a phenomenon which is called the fact that in general you have running constant. And this, the fact, the dependence that the coupling constant here on this curve depends on the scale, is in fact can be encoded in encoded into a differential equation. Equation which is called a renormalization. Flow equation. Okay? Because you may ask if at a fixed energy scale, let us call it mu naught, the renormalized Koplik constant has some fixed value, G or not, fixed. Okay, so I fixed. I choose a point here. I choose a point here. I choose a point here at mu naught. And I'm asking now if I know that the value of the Koplik constant at this energy scale has this value, what will be the value of the Koplik constant measured at this energy scale? And rather than having an equation like that, in fact, so the question is now, if the mu is different from mu naught, what will be the gr of mu for the same physical theory? And rather than having an equation like that, in fact, it's a better question to assume what's happening when I change from, I choose a mu, which is mu naught plus a small variation of mu. So that we have an infinitesimal variation, and then I can iterate this infinitesimal variation. So what you can compute is, if I make this change, you see, gr of mu will be the original value gr naught plus some variation d of gr, small. And you take this formula here, and you make, you assume, you take mu2 to be equal, for instance, to mu1 plus d mu. You expand in d mu, and what you obtain in an equation, which is mu over d gr of d mu, where gr is considered as a function of mu, and you find that it is simply given by 3 over 4 pi squared gr squared of mu. So you get a flow equation, which is just a very simple differential equation, which tells you that when I'm changing mu by a small amount, then gr changed by a small amount, which is proportional to gr squared, with a positive sign, which comes from this fact. Just, it's just this coefficient that you put here. Okay? And this function, in fact, is called the beta function of gr of mu. It's called the beta function. By definition, the beta functions is, tells you, it's the derivative of the running Koplik constant with respect to the logarithm of the scale of the theory for a fixed physical theory. The beta function is defined from this definition when you want the physics is fixed. Okay? And it's called the beta function basically for historical reasons, because one of the first papers
discussing this is, I think it was one of the papers by Callan and Simonzi. They had various functions, and this function was called beta. There was an alpha, okay, beta, gamma. And so the name beta function stays attached to those renormalization group equations. See? And so the beta function, so this is a general definition. The general definition is a beta function for some coupling G. It's a function of G. It's just a variation of the running coupling constant GG of mu with respect to the horizon mu in any theory, considering that the physics is fixed. Physics is fixed, and you are just changing the energy scale at which you are measuring the coupling constant. Yes?
Why do you have like a subscript on beta G? Why is the G subscript?
Why is there?
Beta,
oh,
beta,
that's because I call it beta of G, but okay, I should remove in that case. That's simply because it's a beta function as attached to this coupling constant, G. If you have a theory with, for instance, two coupling constants, G1, well, let us call them different. Let us assume that you have a series with a coupling constant which is called G and another coupling constant which is H. Then you may compute how it does with the energy scale. Case G of mu, and you get a beta function, but this beta function in general depends on G of H. So this is a beta function attached to the G function, and you can do the same thing for the other coupling, G of H, and you get the beta another beta function, which is attached to your, yes?
In the second one?
Pardon?
Left hand in H.
There is a,
in the second one, you mean
H? Oh, it's H. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. This is H of mu. Yes. Very sorry. Okay. Yes?
What do you mean by that the physics is fixed?
The physics is fixed means simply that either all irreducible functions are fixed. They do not change. So, I have a result for the irreducible function, and I choose to move g and mu, but keeping the result of the function fixed. Okay, so that's one of the definitions. But you can very easily show that this means also, or also, that the bare couplings g and m squared and lambda are fixed. Because if you start, imagine, you start from a functional integral defined by some action with some coefficient a, b, c, and some ultraviolet cutoff lambda. Okay. If you do not change, if you change g and mu, keeping a, b, c, and the ultraviolet cutoff unchanged, the functional integral you are starting from doesn't change. You are always computing the same integral. Therefore, the correlation function of the field are fixed. Okay, so it's another way to compute the beta function. You take the relation, which is written here, between the renormalized coupling constant, the bare coupling constant, and the ultraviolet cutoff, and you change in this formula gr and mu, keeping lambda and g fixed. And you can check that you obtain the same beta function given by this formula. You see? So the beta function in the 5-4 theory is simply plus 3 over 4 pi squared g squared. And that's the important result of the beta function. The beta function starts as g squared, so I can write it here. It starts like that. And with a positive coefficient. And let me finish by just solving this equation. This is weird. Let me finish just by solving this equation, because now I have a very simple flow equation that d over d of logarithm of mu of g of mu equal times some coefficient. So this is 3 over 4 pi squared g of mu squared. And I can integrate this flow equation because it defines the flow is on the line of coupling depending on mu. And what do I get? I get obviously that g of mu is equal to g naught, the original coupling constant that's can be noted, times 1 minus 3 over 4 pi squared g naught times logarithm of u over u naught. So I integrate this flow equation starting with the initial condition that g of mu naught equal g naught. This is the solution of this differential equation. And the solution of this differential equation, if I integrate with respect to log of mu, you see, so log of mu goes to minus infinity, which means very low energy. Energies to very high energy. And when doing that, you see that when mu is small, log of mu is large and negative. So this is 1 minus something which is large and negative. So this is 1 plus something which is large and positive. So this is a large number. So g of mu is small. It means that this is small. Okay, at the energy scale mu naught, I have g naught. But something is happening at large energies because you might have that this becomes equal to zero. But you saw that because of the coefficient here, which is positive, g of mu goes to zero at low energy, namely large distances, if you prefer. Okay? And it goes at low energy as 1 over logarithm of 1 over mu with some coefficients that we are able to compute. It's 4 pi squared over 3. See? So from the calculation of the beta function, you know how the coupling constant, the running coupling constant of the phi 4 theory, goes to zero at low energies. It goes like 1 over logarithm with a coefficient, which is just the coefficient of the beta function. So you get something, you get from the integration of this renormalization flow group equation, which is sometimes called the Kanan-Simoncic equation. Well, Kanan-Simoncic equation are some consequences of this equation for correlation function, but so flow equation are related. But they were also considered by Gell-Mann and now in quantum electrodynamics before. From these two equations, we know how the running coupling constant of the theory behaves at low energies. You see? Just by integrating the flow equation, and the coefficient here is the coefficient of the beta function. You see? Yes?
Can we define beta function for the mass? Like, we see that for the mass corrections, quadratic and lambda, non-logarithmic. So.
Oh, you mean, can one define the beta function for the mass?
Yeah, because, like, does it make any difference?
Yes. Here, the renormalized mass is always equal to zero. So you see, so for the massless theory, the renormalized mass is equal to zero. So in fact, it means that the renormalized mass can be, depending on the renormalization scale, is still equal to zero. So it corresponds, in fact, to a fixed point.
you have a group of transformation according to the scale, which acts in a non-trivial way for the coupling constant, but which acts in a trivial way for the mass if the mass is set to zero. So if the mass, the physical mass is set to zero, the renormalized mass is equal to zero at all scales, which is something you can expect. Okay? But in general, if you were starting from a theory with a mass which is non-zero, there is also some kind of renormalization of flow defined for the mass. But it's more complicated, so I won't have time to discuss it in the lecture. But indeed.
But this condition we made it like artificially, or like it was in the theory from the beginning. Like we wanted to satisfy this condition, from this we determined like the renormalization flow.
I'm not sure I really understand what you mean.
I mean, this condition that renormalized mass will be zero at all scales. Like,
yes.
We impose it artificially?
No, no. We fixed it. We fixed that the physical mass was set to zero. And if you do that, of course, if you measure the physical mass at any scale, you will find it is zero. So it's not artificial. It means that if you fine-tune the mass, in the action of the functional integral, so that the physical mass is zero, you can measure the mass at any scale, you will always find it is zero.
So maybe a simpler way.
Yes.
You're just describing a theory that has massless particles.
Yes.
That behave like five particles.
Yes.
So if you have some massless particles, like say, I don't know, you have massless protons that behave like bosons with spin zero, this would be the theory.
Yeah.
So like we can fit parameters so that at any scale mass will be zero, so it will not.
You know that the mass is zero because you measured it experimentally, for example.
Yes.
And this is the theory for it.
If you measure the physical mass to be zero in experiments, you know, whatever the experiments you find, you will always find that the mass is zero. You will always find that the particles move at the speed of light, whatever the energy of the particle is. That's what it means, basically. It's of course not true for massive particles, but if you have a massless particle, it moves at the speed of light at any, whatever its energy is, except perhaps some kind of strange neutrino. Okay, so I think I'm already much, much too late. So I stop there, and I will discuss this a little bit more next time before discussing renormalization from a different point of view. Okay, thank you.